Joining me on Startup Report today is Farouk Siddiqui from The Finance. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Did I do that right?
You got that right, yes. Right.
And you're here because you won second place at Startup Week during the pitch competition.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, during the startup showcase that they had at the end, right? So
that was in the Tampa. They had the St. Pete side and the Tampa side, and you won the Tampa side, or second
place. Second place in the Tampa side, right? So it was great to have people, you know, come and vote for us and really show some good support.
Right. So let's dig into DeFinance so we can understand what it is, and then we'll follow up from there. Can you give us the elevator pitch?
Sure. DeFinance is a fintech that's tackling the student loan crisis. We're taking it from a little different approach. We're not lending money. We're actually refinancing student loans using income share agreements. Mm-hmm. So if someone comes to us with an existing student loan, they go through our approval process. And if approved, we're able to pay off their existing student loan. And in return, our algorithm predicts the right income share. So they will have an option to choose what income share percentage and what length of time they want to share their income with us for. So once that's done, then there's a lot of protections built in the program. So if, for example, the payment varies with income. So if their income goes down, the payment gets less. If income goes up, payment goes more. And also if they lose their job, you know, it's an income share agreement, no income to share, obviously, if you don't have any income, right? So there's absolutely no payments to make during that time. And it's not a loan, so there's no interest accumulating or the balance growing or anything like that either.
Interesting. So, and then on the other side of that, obviously, you're going to have capital to pay off those loans. Does that come from a fund that you're creating or investors interacting individually with each student?
Yeah, because we look at this as like a supply and demand thing. So from a demand perspective, we feel like, you know, there's people out there, a lot of people out there with student loans.
Right.
But on the supply side, yeah, we have to create the supply. We have to create the funding to do this. And as far as that's going to come from institutional investors, there's lots of social impact funds out there, you know, money out there as well, family offices, insurance companies, pension funds, et cetera. And over time, we hope that this can even grow into like a P2P platform where we can get regular folks who want to support something like this and earn a return.
But the matching is not one-to-one between an investor and a student. It's they're investing in the pool of all the students that you're running through the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It would be a pool because we have to diversify that risk, right? It's too risky to do it one-on-one.
Got it. So, you know, financially, then obviously there's an interest attached to the standard loan, and then you're moving to a revenue share. And the term of the revenue share will be tied, there'll be a profit built into that for the investor. How will that profit compare to a standard interest rate?
Yeah, so the profit, number one, it's variable, right? There's a risk and reward for the investor. So they take the risk on the downside and they hopefully will benefit from the upside. As far as where it ties in, we believe we'll be very competitive with people that have like graduate plus loans, parent plus loans, private student loans. Not necessarily with people that have regular federal-backed student loans. Because we don't feel like there's a big gap in the market. Right. Those have a lot of protections built into them.
Yep.
Where the private stuff doesn't have a lot of protections built in. So people really are suffering in the market, right, from those types of loans. So that's where we want to kind of be at is to play in that universe.
Okay. So then roughly speaking, if someone has a loan, the benefit to them to partake in this program is that, A, their protection is built into if they don't work, they don't pay. And there's not an interest rate, but it's a predictable, predictably tied to their income. That's the benefit to the student loan holder. And then to the other side of that, then you would set the payback term. So you'd say, okay, if you work, I want to do it for 5 years. You're paying off a $100,000 loan for me. For us to get a return, we're going to set this return amount at $120,000 on the 100 and then divide that back into how many payments they'd have to make to do that. And then the risk comes in where if they aren't able to work, that money will be less, that return will be less. But if they get promoted and get a higher salary, then that return would be more.
Yeah, Joe, you've been asking about, you know, benefits of the refinancer. And we've kind of come up with another innovative concept where we feel like one of the things that we've been hearing is that young people are not saving money because of student loans. So that kind of got us thinking. So we came up with this concept that what if they took a little bit of equity or ownership in their own ISA? And that way, over time, you know, they would have, let's say they take a 5% in the beginning and we can build it into their payment plan so they don't have to put it out of their pocket. So then that way, their account keeps growing over time. So by the end, they actually get a return on the money that they kind of invested in themselves. And I think that's also beneficial for investors because then shows the investor kind of like, you know, like a bank when they request a down payment in a house. shows the investor that somebody believes in themselves, they're taking some equity in their own ISA, and then that money, if they default in the middle, can just be, you know, forfeited to the investors or access a little bit of a guarantee as well. So we feel like this concept will go a long way for both the refinancer as well as the investors.
That's a great idea. And can you define ISA?
Income share agreement is what an ISA is, yes. Yeah, so we have a predictive algorithm that predicts a certain scenario based on each individual candidate, right? So the investor would have an idea for what they may expect, you know, from a range perspective, like we would look at it as an IRR or a CAGR, you know, or annualized, right? But that would vary depending on individual scenarios. But as we can blend this with many candidates in a pool, then hopefully that would, you know, level out into a stream of income that the investor would get over time.
So in the perfect world, some people get promoted, some people struggle, and they all even out to kind of that expected IRR.
Right. And then, you know, obviously we're underwriting these things. We want to make sure, especially in the beginning, where we select professions carefully. We look at focus on professions where we have good data for, right? And we have partners where we have data on various professions in terms of their unemployment, income growth potential, et cetera. So we're going to target like that. But then over time, as the pools get larger and larger, then you can take a little bit more risk and kind of bring in and make sure that pretty much everybody has an opportunity to do this that wants to do it.
And how much do macroeconomic trends play into your algorithm?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the unemployment aspect does play into it. But if you think about it, there's no interest rate risk as much, right? Because we're not pegged to interest rates. There's no real stock market risk. It's more macroeconomic, more unemployment types of risk. And even if we're selectively choosing various professions and people that actually have gone to college and so on, so then I think we are mitigating even some of those risks that are out there.
And how do you mitigate, how do you consider different types of income? Obviously, some can be heavy in options or bonuses, or, you know, people may do side hustles. There's a lot of people that are going out and being freelancers. So there's, you know, people can derive incomes from ways, you know, which are big parts of their income from things other than just their straight annual salary. How do you consider that?
Yeah, I mean, we would look at, you know, all of those things. We have certain verifications built in. So number one, we would verify with the employer. In fact, we would make every attempt to set up the payment directly from the employer, right? So that we, on a month-to-month basis, we're verifying that they're employed with this particular employer and what their salary is. We also would have access, or at least view access, into their bank accounts to make sure that we are capturing, if they are doing a side hustle or a second job, whatever, we're capturing all of that on a month-to-month basis as well. And then over time, on a yearly basis, we would do an annual reconciliation tied to their tax return.
Got it.
Just to make sure that if anything was missed, and then if they paid more money, they would get a credit. If they paid less, they would have to make that up, you know, on an annual basis. But yeah, I mean, like you're talking about side hustles, but there's also like commission income, right? Bonuses, all kinds of stuff. So salaries is of course the number one component. And then we would look at sort of algorithm. We'll look at how they've performed in the past to sort of set the right salary or like overall income for the algorithm to predict. And then that could be adjusted on an annualized basis with the reconciliation.
So let's talk about the company a little bit. So how did you get started? How many people are involved now? How's the fundraising process been?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in financial services dating back to, well, way too much longer than I want to remember now. So insurance, mortgages, different financial services. Also during the dot-com days, I spent a lot of time in the technology world. Mm-hmm. Had my own web development shop for a while. Mm-hmm. But really, I guess going through the financial crisis, really, some of these issues really hit hard, right? At that time, I had another startup. We were actually developing a commercial real estate program based on lease to own type of a model. And so our startup suffered a lot because, you know, capitalization dried up. The whole, you know, CMBS marketplace in Wall Street basically shut down. We were partnered up with Deutsche Bank. So everybody, you know, and then those days, you know, the rug was pulled under from our feet.
Lots of pain.
So that impacted me on a personal level, obviously, income, other things. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got to see the financial crisis, you know, as a business owner, as a person,
right?
And also as an insider to see, you know, how much self-inflicted wounds that resulted in all of this stuff, right? So I guess to me, I made a sort of a decision in my mind that I want to work on socially responsible solutions, you know, solutions that presented an alternative to the way things are done normally. So that sort of brought the impetus for doing what we're doing now. It took some time to sort of work on some of these issues. We worked on an insurance business for a little while, and then eventually settled on the student debt problem after extensive research in 2018. So this problem, as you know, right? I mean, $1.5 trillion plus in student loans, 45 million people suffering. And There are universities now that are tackling it with income share agreements, like Purdue University, University of Utah, Clarkson, and others, and like Lambda School and other coding boot camps also. But everybody talks about the problem from a $1.5 trillion perspective.
Right.
But those people actually have existing loans, right? They're not in school anymore.
Right.
So, and we were thinking to ourselves, like, who's really working with them? Who's trying to solve their problem, right?
So most of the people are trying to go in the front end before the loans are issued to find solutions. And you're actually saying we can tackle the problem that exists today.
So that's sort of what brought us to focusing on refinancing. And even from a risk perspective, we feel like risk is a little bit more mitigated because we already know that their work, people are working. We can kind of assess their income and they have a little bit of credit history by the time they're already in the workforce. Mm-hmm. Where for students, you know, you don't even know if somebody's going to graduate, you know, how their degree will translate to their economic outcome, and credit history is really not really there. So so even for investors, we felt like it would be a little bit easier to swallow if we focus on the refinancing side. And on the company level, we have six people now, including myself, five other folks in the company. And we are doing a round right now to raise enough capital to finish our pilot. So we're in our private beta now. We started in the middle of March. And hopefully within the next month, we should be doing our first couple of deals. And then slowly start scaling up from there as we complete our funding.
So anything that, you know, this works best at scale, which means that you need to get in front of people who have student loans. Cost of customer acquisition is always a big challenge in these types of efforts because you actually have it twice. You have to find the investors and do that development and that sourcing. And then you need to get a large number of student loan holders who are interested in the program. And obviously there's a lot of noise out there with refinancing and other competing products, even if they're just traditional products. So how will you cut through the noise and get the attention of all these folks with student loans?
Well, from a cost of acquisition perspective, I think the digital strategies can really, you know, cut that down. So we're going to focus on the internet, social media, et cetera. I have a lot of experience in niche marketing and affinity marketing too.
Right.
And that also really can help bring down the cost of acquisition. So we're identifying specific target groups, like say alumni associations at different universities, professional groups, doctors, you know, engineers, lawyers, et cetera, that may want to help on both sides, actually help as investors, but also help their fellow, you know, doctors, engineers, alumni get out of debt. So we feel like those strategies are going to help bring down those costs. But of course, they have to be tested and refined. We're developing our customer personas, kind of looking at, you know, who sort of likes this product, and then, you know, where can we find the best value from a pricing and service and other perspectives, and kind of use that as a Venn diagram to target those types of people, which again will help bring down the customer acquisition cost. Because the more you can get your personas refined and you know exactly who you're going after, you know, you can really bring down your marketing costs. On the investor side, it's more relationship sort of based, you know, so we're looking to kind of build a nice board of people, board of directors as well, that can help open some doors at different institutions and so on. But we're isolating certain types of institutions and funds that we think would our product would really appeal to. So, and we'll start, you know, marketing that. So that's going to be more grassroots, more you know, more relationship building, more
traditional sales
extent, type of activity. And again, we don't need to, you know, all of a sudden do $1 billion tomorrow, right? So that can scale up, you know. Sure. But number one, we have to sort of really show that there's a product market fit and people really want this.
Right.
And I think it's kind of like the field of dreams, right? If you build it, or if you can show the demand is there, then the supply will come.
And speaking of that supply, was your first startup in the Tampa Bay area as well?
Or? No, I actually from the New Jersey area. So spent about 30 plus years in the New Jersey, New York area.
And how juxtaposed to New Jersey, how have you found building a company in Tampa and St. Pete?
I wish I had sort of come out from under the rock a little sooner. I mean, we sort of came out, we were kind of working at this all last year, mm-hmm. but it took us till about November, December to start, you know, kind of engaging with the local ecosystem. A very pleasant surprise in the sense that it's a smaller market than New Jersey, New York, obviously, but the ecosystem, I really feel like it's growing and there's a lot of interest to make it grow, right? There's a lot of proactiveness going on, you know, locally here. So it's been a great, great surprise, pleasant surprise. I mean, we've already partnered up with Embark Collective. So we're one of their companies. We've been at the Wave since startup week. And we also just got permission to join USF Connect. So it's already three, you know, local incubators or you know, support ecosystems providers that have engaged with us, and we're engaging with them again. So yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I think here, hopefully there's an opportunity to shine, because if there's not a lot of big fish in this pond, right, then hopefully if we do well, then we can really, you know, stand out.
That's a great perspective.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you coming in and sharing your story, and we'll keep watching and helping where we can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.